Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Labor Day edition of The Drive. Hope everybody had a good weekend. First full weekend of college football and a lot of fun games. Well, I guess if you're on the winning side, it's fun. But yes, we are here on this Monday afternoon. It is our regular Monday crew here in the studio. Bill and Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, and Drew at the controls. I hope everybody has had a good Labor Day weekend and having a good Labor Day. So welcome in here. What a beautiful day, too. I mean, it was great weather Saturday for football, and the really gorgeous weather has continued into this Monday.
I was thinking about this during the Auburn-UMass game, and I meant to look it up, but I could just ask you guys because you'll know. Has Auburn lost an opener since Georgia Tech in 05?
Don't think so.
I mean, so Auburn has not experienced what we've experienced in the past as Auburn fans, and what I think people around the country and a couple of programs around the conference are experiencing, which is that Monday after a week one loss panic, because everything you thought about the offseason, everything you heard during the optimism season turned out to not, at least in the first game of the season, did not go as planned. And I think there are a couple teams in the SEC.
Oh, there are.
Florida and LSU.
Whoops.
South Carolina,
you can add to the list as well, that did not did not envision an 0-1 start and certainly didn't think it would look the way it did for Auburn. You were a 35-point favorite, so the thought of an 0-1 start would have been a pretty historic upset had UMass come in here and won, but I think Auburn took care of business and did things more or less what you were hoping for in a game where the opponent was a couple of tiers below the home team. So yeah, I thought it was the energy was as advertised. People went with the dress code, right, Bill?
Like
the whiteout was
impressive to see, you know, how whiteout the stadium really was. And then the students all had the white shakers too, so the look was great. The atmosphere was outstanding.
Auburn can do that for a big game,
yep.
I think. Maybe it can be the home opener tradition, or maybe Auburn can save it for a big game. But after seeing the whiteout in action Saturday, I think that's absolutely that's something you can put in the arsenal of Jordan Hare tricks for the foreseeable future. And I'd love to see him. I mean, not that the opener isn't a big game, right, Bill? But maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, if they did it for a conference game, according to SEC rules, the home team can choose to wear white uniforms.
The home team chooses the color. They choose whether they're going to wear their traditional home jerseys or the white.
There needs to be an agreement.
Yes.
For out of conference games, and I believe the road team can decline and choose to wear the traditional road whites, but for an SEC game, if Auburn wanted to do the whiteout, they could elect to wear white uniforms at home.
They're paying UMass, so UMass is not going to say, "Oh no, we're not going to do that," right? Or they could put it in
UMass
the contract.
UMass gets their money no matter what, though. Like if the week of the game, if the UMass coach says, "No, we're going to wear white uniforms," because we choose to wear the road white, you can't really do much about it. But in a conference game, you have the you have the option. So maybe moving forward, maybe Auburn thinks about whiting out the stadium for an SEC game and going with the white uniforms. What do you think of that, Brian?
If you're going to white out, wear white. If you're going to orange out, wear orange. If you're going to blue out, wear blue. I think it's a pretty simple thing. You know,
I disagree with the wear orange for an orange out. I think you can orange out the stadium without an orange uniform. Otherwise, I agree for the most part. Like, I think that's, I mean, but no, I don't, you know, although they did, what did they debut? The orange warm-up? They were rocking on the field before,
the warm-ups were cool.
I have not seen the orange warm-up before, which has sort of Auburn and I don't know how you would say it, right? Like transparent. It was like transparent lettering. Like
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, so it was Auburn and sort of difficult to discern blue letters.
I didn't ever put the glasses on. I wasn't that close.
But it's a sharp looking orange warm-up. But that's Brian Matthews, by the way.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, I mentioned Brian.
Did we? Okay,
here.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, it's our regular Monday crew.
Well, how would you feel? You think whiteout conference game white uniforms? You on board?
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I like the stormtrooper look anyway. So maybe Auburn tries that sometime.
Do it to LSU, right? Because make them wear purple.
Yeah, they do not like wearing the dark jerseys. You're right. That's the team to do it to because they're the ones that like to wear the white at home. A fun weekend. Auburn wins handily. They pick up a big commitment over the weekend as well. So very productive weekend. Brian and I were among the crowd over there today for Hugh Freeze's press conference. And I sort of expected this. I mean, it was not the most beautiful thing you'll ever see. It's great to win and win handily the way Auburn did. And they could have scored over 60 if they'd wanted there at the end. But there are some things that need working on. It's not like everything's fine and now Auburn's going to go out and win the next, you know, three ball games for sure. Auburn has some work to do, and I thought it was interesting. Hugh Freeze came in and started talking about he just came out of his truths meeting.
Yeah, and he said he was extra hard on his coaches and players after the win because he thinks that's an opportunity to do that, right, when everybody's not down on themselves. And, you know, I think – despite scoring 59 points, I think Auburn break the 400-yard barrier?
They did, but barely. Yeah. They almost had 500.
I guess maybe it was the first three quarters or two and a half quarters where they were scoring, but they weren't exactly up big numbers.
Yeah, now, they had some big plays, and they had two. I mean, they scored 21 points in the third quarter and ran six plays because it was a pick six. And two one-play touchdowns.
Yeah, I saw numbers earlier today that indicated that on a per-play basis, Auburn was one of the more effective rushing offenses in the country this past weekend as well. I mean, you know, some of that extended with the big runs later in the game, but even in the first half, I mean, you saw that this is a team that's going to try to run the football, and you know, I'm curious to see how it. Hugh Freeze was talking about so much of this is on Peyton. The run game is so many of the plays are plays where the quarterback has a choice as far as what to do. And yeah, I wonder if that gets sharper and more difficult for defenses to deal with as Peyton gets more comfortable as Auburn's quarterback. But yeah, still, you saw the desire for this team to run the football and the number of guys they're going to use to run the football, even without Jarquez Hunter on Saturday.
Yeah, I think they had three guys over 50. Damari had 40 in the start. Justin Jones got four carries in there. Brian Petit got eight carries. Just second to Robbie Ashford's nine carries as the Wildcat. So, yeah.
Yeah, they spread it out. Yep. Spread it out quite a bit among the running backs. And today, no real update on Jarquez, so we'll see.
I think the next piece of news would be reports about whether or not he travels on Thursday with the team. You know, on Friday, I think there will be there will be buzz out there as to whether or not Jarquez made the trip to California, and then if he's in California, I would expect him to play personally. But if he's not on the trip, it's going to be tough to impact the game from.
From
Alabama. Yeah. My thinking would be that's we're probably not going to know anything officially until the next time we see him on the field. Like that's
yeah.
Probably yeah. I think it'd be better off for Auburn just say he was suspended one game or two games, three games, and then it's over with. You're not getting the questions, you know, every week after every media thing, but whatever they want to do.
Do you think any of it could be gamesmanship as to keep Cal in the dark about whether or not Jarquez Hunter is playing?
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, I don't know how much of it is motivated by that and how much of it is privacy.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's been sort of using he's been using privacy to explain, you know, and I think there's that would also the Wilkie Dinaud situation would probably fall into that as well. The, you know, the piece of news from the weekend regarding the true freshman getting into a bit of legal trouble reportedly, and I think that's also something where probably not going to get anything official if as. Either in the post game or today, has Hugh actually been asked about?
No, but he's still on the team.
Wilkie Dinaud, yeah.
So, no changes to his status.
Yeah.
Did he participate on Saturday? Yeah.
No.
I'm guessing. Yeah, I'm thinking that's also like a thing where.
Until I don't think he wasn't dressed out Saturday.
Yeah, and I'm thinking until there's more clarity, sort of officially. You know, you might not know like.
Auburn played a lot of folks.
Yeah.
On Saturday, though.
Wilkie's going to redshirt regardless, though. So, he's not playing this fall.
But they got a lot of players in the game. I mean, got a lot of looks at a lot of players. There are some things. I mean, Hugh spoke more to the mistakes offensively. He spoke a little bit about some mistakes defensively, more alignments and assignments, things like that. Brian, I'm still more than a little concerned about Auburn's ability to stop the run. If you look at what UMass did when they ran the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, their numbers will show, hey, it's not bad. I mean, Auburn allowed 140 yards, and you go, that's not terribly bad. But UMass was playing from behind, and they weren't trying to run the ball after early on.
Well, they had a 100-yard rusher. K'Ron Adams had 101 yards on 14 carries.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, they had the sacks, you know, their four sacks come off of their rushing yardage. Yeah. You take those four attempts and add those 16 yards, and they averaged nearly 7 yards a rush against Auburn.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, that's something to be very concerned about. And then they're playing a Cal team, and that's the first thing Hugh Freeze said is their running back is good.
Well, that first drive for UMass was way too easy.
Oh,
for
a yes, team, you're not
for a
kidding.
Team that's supposed to be the worst offense Auburn sees all year, according to a lot of the advanced metrics, or if not the worst, one of the bottom two. For that team to cut through Auburn, like, use your favorite metaphor, like whatever you want to say, you know, they went through, I mean, like a lightsaber, right? Like, I mean, they just, and that was, now that was the only real success UMass
had against the first group,
sustained for the first three quarters of the game, but then no, there, I mean, I can imagine a lot of Auburn fans holding their breath and having dark clouds suddenly come into the picture when you saw the way UMass was playing in that, especially on that first drive. Now the Auburn defense adjusted, and I thought that was, you know, they were able to show you some really promising things later in the game, but yeah, I mean that first drive was some scary stuff for a defense that's going to face really talented offenses later on. And I mean, starting Saturday in Berkeley.
Yeah, Cal had Cal was pushing 700 yards in total offense this past week.
A couple of things you talked about the defense. He started out; they had 15 missed alignments, which he said was basically unacceptable. You know, just guys getting lined up wrong.
Well, I mean, considering Auburn only defended 50-something plays.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's 30% of your, you know, nearly 30% of your snaps. Somebody's misaligned. Of course, I guess it could be multiple ones on one snap.
And then he also talked about defensively.
Before we move on to the misalignments, I wonder how much of that is a product of introducing so many new pieces to a defense.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
But you're right. It's not acceptable no matter what, but the yeah, I mean, the hope is that between players like Austin and Larry, like maybe when the linebackers have more experience and
I didn't notice the linebackers much at all.
Yeah.
And when I watched the replay, I noticed I didn't notice
much. What did you notice? You noticed, was it Cam Riley got the start?
Yes.
And played
not
some
much
on the first drive, and then it felt like you didn't see as much Cam Riley the rest of the first half. I don't know if that was. Although I would guess it was health, but you saw him on special teams.
No, that's right.
In the second half.
He was still out there. They were mixing. I mean, they were mixing a lot mixing and matching a lot of different combinations.
I thought Eugene Asante played pretty well.
I thought Asante looked to be out. The most active of the linebackers.
Yep. The other thing that you mentioned about the defense was getting off blocks. He said he's still concerned about they're not doing a good job of disengaging from those blocks and making enough plays. So that's something I'm sure they're going to continue to work on. And I do think the alignment issues and all those things are just, to me, I expected something like that, you know. Brand new defense, all the new players, new coaches, new schemes. It's going to take some time to get it right, especially defensively, because you're making so many big changes. You're going from whatever they played last year, you know, to being an attacking style defense with a whole bunch of new players out there.
Yeah, they did have, you know, plays for loss. They had some sacks, had of course a pick six. So I mean, there were some
seven tackles
big
for
plays.
Loss, four sacks, and those are those chaos things that Ron
Donovan Kaufman
wants.
looked like he really enjoys being that guy to the blitzer or the guy to come off the edge and help.
He looked good out there. He was moving really quick and really showing a lot of force at the point of attack. I thought he had some nice plays out there.
334-321-1390. That's the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. They're the sponsor of hour number one of the drive.
That's right. You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the drive text box. That's presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. However you listen to podcasts, go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. You can consume, use the show that way. Rate, review, subscribe if you listen to the show that way. Or you go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. That's presented, again, by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join in here on the Labor Day edition of The Drive.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday, Labor Day. Hope everybody doing well. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com with Drew at the controls here in the studio. 21 minutes after 4 o'clock, and let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Tex is up first. Hey, Tex.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
We're doing fine.
Doing all right, Tex. Good to hear from you.
Tough to break away from. Let me tell you, it was tough to get away, though. A beautiful day. Tough to get away. I'd gotten the yard and the pool and everything clean. It was tough to get away to come in. But, you know, got to be on the air the first day possible after a big opener.
Well, for sports geeks like me, thanks for being on the air today.
Sure, so, that's what we do. That's why we do it.
I don't like the national guys too much. So just a couple things. Number one, I think the first question you got to ask about Saturday, Bill, you ever been to an opener that started during the middle of the day that was ever cooler than that?
No, I have not.
Me either. So, number two, I did have to provide pictures to my wife because she's the one that told me to break my old habits and wear white to the game because that's what everybody was supposed to do. And I wore it. So I may just wear white shirts the rest of the year.
Uh-oh.
So even on orange and blue days. And, Dan, if you want to know what you're supposed to wear, there's a schedule out there that has it on there.
Oh, I know they've released the schedule. What do you? I was indicating.
No, there's a schedule dictating what you're supposed to wear.
Oh,
on the games that they're telling you what to wear.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. I was suggesting that moving forward, the whiteout could be a conference game where you wear white uniforms. But no, I mean it's the folks. I was really impressed with the way with how much of the stadium went with the. Went with the whiteout in different and elaborate ways.
Well, Dan, you almost had me at. I thought you were going to say you were impressed that I actually wore white. That's the first time I've ever worn white to opening day.
Wow. Okay.
So I always wear orange.
Well, it makes sense that you have a whiteout before Labor Day.
I'm thinking
anyway,
you're not supposed to have a whiteout. I'm thinking like a polo. What are we talking about here? Like a polo text? Was it a?
No, I wore a sundress.
Okay, yeah, that was my next. That was my next guess. Yeah.
No, I do want to see pictures. Then I definitely got to see pictures.
It's a little too warm for the Gene Chizik smock, so you couldn't.
I wear a polo when it's 40 degrees in there. So anyway. Enough about that. So a little breakdown of the game. First of all, anybody that's totally worried about the first drive is way off base. We played base defense with a two-deep zone. The safeties weren't up. We did not attack on one play on the first drive. It showed basically when we turned loose and went with five on the rush and did some stunts up front in the second drive. They basically had no clue. But what it did show me on the first drive is what it would be like if we really had a quarterback that could run and throw. Very interesting. I thought that young man played extremely well. Very elusive, very nice arm, accurate most of the time, and was able to run. And when he ran, he covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, so, you're right.
You're talking about Pumachan, the starter for UMass?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I never pronounce names that I can't pronounce. So the guy that started for UMass.
I thought the backup they went to made a couple of really impressive throws too. But for Pumachan, I was impressed with the way he would hang in the face of, you know, incoming disaster. Like there'd be guys bearing down on him, and he would still find a way to make the throw, or he'd be rolling into a situation where contact was inevitable, and he would still find a way. To make an accurate throw. I thought he was that guy is very clearly tough.
Yeah, very tough, and I would tell you he looked huge. By the way, Bill, the new seats are way better than the old seats.
Yeah, I thought they would be.
I know there's only about 8 rows difference, but they're way better. It's the things you can hear and the things that you can see. The new seats are way better.
Yeah, as long as you're up high enough when you're in the lower bowl. As long as you're up high enough,
right?
It's better. You're right.
Yes. So a couple other things. Peyton Thorne is quicker than you think when he tucks the ball and moves out. But what I really like about him is his head's up looking down the field. The throw that he made running to the visitor's sideline against the grain was a big-time throw. I think...
Yeah, the one Shane Hooks.
That's the Shane Hooks throw where he caught it on the sideline.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the one where he missed the touchdown on the home team sideline when we ran kind of a double, I forget what they call that, like a double swing where they ran out and he completely missed over the wrong shoulder to the tight end for a touchdown. It looked to me like somebody who fielded a ball at shortstop and double gripped it and just threw it bad. So I thought he threw a pretty good ball. I think Gurner threw a very good ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think Robbie Ashford looks much bigger. I thought he looks much more physical, and he has not lost a step. My only issue with him is if we're playing LSU, Georgia, Mississippi State, anybody else in the conference, they're not going to allow us to line up and do that with him. He's going to have to be able to complete some passes. And not 2 for 6 for 3 yards.
On the Observer podcast, I mentioned when the 2009 season started, Auburn went with Chris Todd and occasionally brought in Cody Burns in a similar. We talked about that in the press box too, Bill. Cody had a game early in the 2009 season where he ran for 3 or 4 touchdowns. It gradually got tougher to go to that as teams saw it, unless you were willing to expand it and have him throw. Teams have run into that problem. But I really like the spark it added on Saturday.
All right, so one thing, did you observe who the first person from the sideline who greeted Robbie Ashford after every one of his touchdowns?
It was Peyton the two times that I noticed.
Yeah, Hugh Freeze actually talked about their celebration, the celebrations today a little bit in the press conference.
It was Peyton Thorne that greeted him first coming off, which was pretty cool to see two guys you know that are competing for something to be that invested in what each other's doing.
Yeah.
Robbie
was one of the first after the Jay Fair deep touchdown to greet Peyton coming off the field.
Absolutely, he was. You just stole my thunder, Dan. I was going to tell you, it happened in reverse also.
And that's, speaking of that touchdown, Tex, briefly, that's also, like, that was a throw. You know, you mentioned the one Peyton Thorne rolling to the sideline and hitting Shane Hooks before Shane Hooks could get out of bounds. I mean, that Jay Fair was open, but you could make a mistake on that throw and it couldn't, and you know he had to put that in a fair, not the tightest of windows, but he had to put that where it needed to be when it needed to be there, and he did for Jay Fair's first career touchdown.
So I agree. It was a beautiful throw. I thought Holden Gurner threw the ball extremely well, too. Hey, and by the way, we had more back shoulder throws in that game, I think, than we've had in the last 15 seasons combined. We never used to throw that ball. Everybody throws it against us, but nobody threw that ball.
Yeah, you're right.
We never threw that ball.
That's one of the reasons Hugh Freeze wants big receivers with catch radius ability and great athletes who can make, you know, who can jump and win those one-on-ones.
And last but not least, I never played linebacker, but I tailgate with a former linebacker that played at Auburn University. Uh-huh. And our discussion was about the lineup issues were the linebackers.
I can believe that.
Getting people in the right spot.
Yeah.
The arms were waving a lot by the defensive ends, trying to figure out where they were supposed to be. And although we didn't give up any huge plays in the situation with the first, I'll say the first 18 or 20 defenders that we played, in the last drive, it was just kind of a blown coverage. That was a lineup situation too. But our linebackers were in the wrong spot and weren't getting the other guys in the right spot. And I think you'll see a change in that
pretty
quickly.
And remember, that's what Ron Roberts said. This is a linebacker-driven defense. Yeah.
Correct. Other than that, Dan, please, I hope we never wear white at home, ever. But
well, that's just because we've been in Baton Rouge too long.
Correct. And by the way, hey, there's some other games that make my weekends great other than Auburn winning, and one of them was last night.
I can see that, yeah.
I never enjoyed State. Cindy said, "You're going to watch every play, absolutely, and I may watch it over once it's done."
There's not very, you don't do the tomahawk chant very often, right? But you were doing it. You were doing it from the couch, watching.
It was so much. It was. They basically manhandled them.
That second half, no question. That last touchdown sort of signaled how the second half went. Right, watching that Florida State player. Just sort of shove LSU halfway back in the end zone.
Well, that was that last touchdown. There's a word for that. There's a couple words for that. That in a lot of places would catch you a lot of grief, but the people here aren't mad at Norville. They're mad at Kelly.
Tex, when I was in Hollywood, that would get you an R rating. All right, that last LSU touchdown.
Exactly. Well, it's great to be exciting. Any of y'all going out to California?
Stoltz is going for us. I will not be there.
Yeah, I'm not going. I thought Dan might, but he had to change his schedule.
I thought about it, but I got to make a trip out west later this year, so I'm going to I try to avoid air travel whenever I can. So I may be up to something else this weekend.
Well, just the opposite. I try and avoid California when I can. So, but I don't mind the air travel. All right, guys. Y'all take care.
Tex. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Mike, Terry, you'll be up when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday, Labor Day. Hope everybody doing well. 23 minutes away from 5 o'clock, and we've got calls holding. Let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Mike is up first. Hey, Mike.
How's it going, guys? Y'all having a good day?
Yeah, pretty good.
Beautiful day in Auburn, huh?
It really is.
The grandkids out playing by the pool. You know, everything's good. You know, I was at the game, and there's a lot of things I saw I didn't like. For one thing, is our quarterback floating balls around that in the SEC is not going to work.
I'm trying to think. There was one that I remember, Bill, where there was like an out sort of comeback.
Oh, there was one that shouldn't have been thrown. You're right. I thought it was going to be picked.
Where a defensive back, pick six. A defensive back didn't close on it.
If it had been in the SEC or against Georgia, it'd be going the other way. And I'm worried about that game Saturday night. Everybody excited about the big win. I was there, and I watched them roll tumors, and I was happy with it, my grandkids and stuff. But I'm not sure if they can beat Cal. They got to do better on defense, stopping somebody from running the football.
I agree
than
there.
Cal can.
No, I think that people might have been underestimating based on Cal's lack of overwhelming success these last couple of years. Justin Wilcox doesn't have a win-loss record that stops you in your tracks as Cal's coach. I think people might have been just chalking this one up as an easy one for Auburn. It does not seem like it's going to be.
Because I'm going to the game, and I ain't sure now if it's worth the trip.
Oh, I think you'll see a fun, competitive football game.
Me and my son, he's coming from Ohio, and we going. And I'm worried about it because they got to get them some linebackers.
Cal ran 95 plays against North Texas. Finished that game. We were just doing the math during the commercial break. Finished that game on a 44-7 run after it was tied at 14 in the second quarter. Cal was only about a touchdown favorite at kickoff in that game against North Texas. First game for the new offensive coordinator. Jake Spavital, who is, I forget the exact origins of it, but his first job in coaching was quality control for Gus at Tulsa. So, you know, he's somebody that Hugh Freeze, I'm sure, has been familiar with for decades as a college coach.
And Cal favored in this game on the book.
No, Auburn is I believe Auburn's about a touchdown favorite in the game coming up on.
Last thing, I thought I heard about half of that. I heard 3.5, 4.
I heard it's 3.5.
The ESPN app currently says 6.5 Auburn, but you could, you know, that could bounce around, you know, and you could find it, you know, other numbers.
That's at Harris.
Yeah, so I don't know where ESPN gets theirs from. I thought it was one of the online. One of the online books, but it's.
I'm worried about it because I'm telling you, I have been hearing about Thorne. I've been sitting in the same seats at that stadium for 30 something years, and I'm not so sure about him.
I would be careful. I know what you mean. I would be careful about projecting too much of what you saw Auburn do against UMass. Tex just made the point, and the previous caller made the point that, you know, Auburn defensively did not want to didn't seem like they were attempting very, very much stuff that was very complex. It seemed like they were trying to keep it pretty simple. I wonder if that was also the approach on offense because they thought UMass was so overmatched. Maybe we'll see more against an opponent like Cal that can score.
Because if we lose to Cal, there ain't no telling what Georgia would do to us.
Oh, you got A&M too before you get there. I mean, don't even be looking at Georgia.
A&M, they are Jimbo Fisher team. They like the stock market. One day they high and the next day they down. And I don't care much about Jimbo Fisher, but I do about that and coaching over in Georgia.
I think that if Auburn were to go to Cal,
Auburn loses at Cal, that they're definitely going to be underdogs in
I think Auburn could beat Cal 77-0, and the books might not have Georgia as an underdog at Jordan-Hare Stadium a couple of weeks later. Like, I don't know if that would, I think that a dispiriting performance from Auburn. Like, if they were to go to Cal and not be competitive, it would be.
And that's what I'm scared of.
He's going
to have to throw the ball better than he threw it Saturday. Because Cal, they're not the same team they played Saturday. And I'm not sold on Hugh Freeze. I never have liked him. See, he was buying football players when everybody else couldn't. Well, everybody can buy them now, so he's on an equal playing field.
All right, Mike. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what.
Let me just say that.
They got
Ole
a pretty
Miss
good
and
one.
Freeze weren't the only ones buying players back in the 2000s or the 90s or the 80s or the 70s or however far you want to go back.
No.
Just going to throw that out there. Sure, it's just speculation or rumor, well, but I feel pretty good about it.
I would say, you know, if Auburn were to go to Cal and it were to be like a non-competitive loss for Auburn, with the teams left on Auburn's schedule, that would be really discouraging. If this game is close, like if this game, I mean, Auburn's only a 6.5-point favorite according to Caesars, and the number might be smaller elsewhere depending on where you look. If this game is close, regardless of what happens, I would not overreact as, oh, all is lost this season because Auburn lost by a field goal in a game where they were a 6-point favorite on the road multiple time zones away. Like if Auburn gets wiped out Saturday, that's a really bad sign for the rest of the year when you think about Cal versus the other teams on the schedule. If this game goes down to the wire and Cal ekes it out at home, to me that doesn't torpedo what Auburn might be able to do with improvements going down the line. Again, that's at least how I see it at the moment. But if
it's going to be tough because you look at the first three games, you feel like Auburn could be 3-0. Mm-hmm. You look at the next three, and they're going to be underdogs, maybe big underdogs in all three of those. So it would really be helpful if they were to find a way to win at Cal and then come back. Of course, win at Sanford. One other thing, the passing game. I didn't think it was efficient enough Saturday, but there are a couple of things to know about this. First of all, just because Peyton Thorne throws it somewhere and it looks like it wasn't a good
throw.
Looks
like a bad throw.
It may be a bad route by the receiver because Hugh Freeze talked a lot about
how. He mentioned two or three times about players, understanding where to run the routes, how to run the routes, finding the landmarks. Yes. What was the other thing he used?
Well, one of the first things.
Spacing. Even when you're not going to catch the ball, how important it was.
One of the first things he talked about was you don't know who, and maybe I think he said earlier in the offseason, some of these guys come from offenses where it's decided who's going to get the ball before they go to the line of scrimmage, and if they're not getting the ball on that play, you know, they didn't always run routes to 100% satisfaction. Hugh Freeze is demanding routes to 100% satisfaction every time you're on the field. And if you're not going to do it, we're going to see a different receiver. And we saw a lot of different receivers in that game on Saturday.
The other thing that Hugh Freeze mentioned after the game, he mentioned again today, was that they didn't do a whole lot in the passing game against UMass. They didn't show a lot. They held a lot back. They made that one adjustment on that pass to Jay Fair for the touchdown there. But that was about it as far as adjustments in the passing game. Because they didn't want to show future opponents, i.e. Cal and some others down the road, some of the different things they're going to do with Peyton Thorne and those guys. So I would just pump the brakes a little bit on Peyton Thorne. That call kind of reminds me of the whole Bo Nix thing, right? He had some of the worst receivers, and he's running one of the worst offenses, in my opinion, in college football. But it was all his fault, right? It's always the quarterback's fault.
Sure. It's the easiest guy to blame.
If you do that against UMass, you know, it won't work against Georgia. Well, he might not play the same way against UMass.
You hope not. All right, we'll get one more before our final break here of hour number one. And Terry is up next. Hey, Terry.
Yeah, I know this is going to sound strange coming from me, but don't judge a guy by one game. I'm the guy that told Bill and Dan that Cam Newton didn't look that good.
Yeah.
So, did the tight ends catch a pass Saturday?
Don't believe so.
I don't remember them.
No, I don't believe so.
I know that.
Remember,
Tyler
was targeted one time.
There was a throw to the back of the end zone that went over Tyler Fromm's head.
Okay.
It like sort of landed next to Tyler Fromm, right? Not in the back of the end zone, short of the end zone.
And how about that 9:30 kickoff?
That concerns me a little bit.
That's a product of ESPN wanting a game that comes on after the 6:00 Bama-Texas game.
I thought it was interesting, Hugh Freeze, you know, the way they're handling it. They're going to practice at their normal time on Friday, and then just Get up and wait.
You think any of these guys are asleep at 9:30 on a Saturday night, though?
No, but most of them don't have to sit around all day with games going on.
That's the challenge, right?
Yes.
Figuring out how to keep the team engaged and physically ready. I wonder if they walk through a little bit later Saturday afternoon.
I don't know. I mean, he said they're going to get in late Thursday, so I thought that meant, okay, we're going to just sort of adjust to that time. We're going to get in late and, you know, the bed check or whatever would be a little later than normal, and then try to go from there.
I bet a lot of this team's taking a nap at some point Saturday before the game Saturday
night.
That's my assumption.
Sure, if they can.
Appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate the call, Terry.
If Auburn ever plays another game on the West Coast where it's home and away, it needs to be in the contract. That game can't start after 8 o'clock Central or something to that effect.
We'll play
right?
at midnight if ESPN tells us. That's what the money's for. Mm. Like I mean, and ESPN wanted
a – That's why you don't schedule it. Yeah, like you said, he doesn't want to play those games.
ESPN wanted a game after the – there's a 6 o'clock game between Bama and Texas and Tuscaloosa. ESPN wanted another game after the 6 o'clock game. Well, and the earliest you could start a game after – you know, if you have a 6 o'clock – yeah, you know, just wait, Brian. We're going to have – we were talking about it in the press box on Saturday. There's going to be an 8 o'clock Central kickoff in conference play at the end of the month because ESPN has a doubleheader, a 5 o'clock, 8 o'clock doubleheader, and it could be Auburn-Georgia. Like, there are games that, that could get that doubleheader, and you could have a game kickoff at 8 Saturday night here in Auburn, which, to me, 8 o'clock Central is crazier than 9:30 Pacific. As far as when you're gonna kick the game, because local time matters a lot. But this is entirely, if you're unhappy about the 2:30 time on Saturday, if you're unhappy about the late start this upcoming Saturday, that's entirely for the television networks.
Need to get to our final break of hour number one. Ed, hang on, you're up when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
This is Dan. 431-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final segment of hour number one, and back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. We're going, Ed is next. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Bill. How you doing, bud?
Doing fine.
I was going to just touch on a couple of things real quick. As far as on the weekend, I was really impressed by Tennessee. I was impressed last night with FSU. Mm-hmm. And then the two teams that kind of left me kind of head scratching was Florida and South Carolina. What do y'all make? I mean, were y'all –
Florida looked bad. I mean, there's no question. There's just no way around that.
So. Yeah. And don't you think in recruiting there's – players, there's going to be all these early commits, you know, it's going to go both ways, you know. But I was going to, for the gentleman that called a little bit earlier, not Terry, but I think the gentleman before him.
Mike.
That rascal. You know, for 30 years to be watching Auburn and to be disappointed with what's going on right now, I cannot understand it. Auburn is doing fantastic in recruiting. They're doing, I don't see how anybody, you know, future recruiting, he's looking at the 2025 class already, you know, that I can't understand anybody being upset with Auburn right now. What do y'all make of that?
Well, I agree with you. Hugh Freeze has done some major overhaul of this team and this program in 9 months. And you're going to see the results on the field. It's going to be a more competitive team, but you're really going to see the results in recruiting and how this team gets better next year and the year after.
Auburn pushing a top 10 class for this year when everybody thought, well, 25 would be the first year you could really make a big splash. Yeah. They're doing it right now.
They're 13th in the country with just 10 commitments right now. I mean, with 18 commitments right now. Yeah.
And also, they're getting 4 and 5 stars.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I'm just mighty proud that something's done. But Florida guys.
Appreciate the call, Ed. We'll talk about recruiting. Auburn picking up a 24 and a 25.
Yep.
Both offensive linemen over the weekend. We'll talk about that. In hour number two, Brian Matthews with Bill and Dan. Love for you to join in as we continue here on the Monday Drive.
Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Labor Day edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well and had a good weekend, a beautiful weekend, and it continues here on Labor Day. Looks like we're going to start warming up a little bit as we head on toward the end of this week when Auburn gets ready to head west to California, try to win a game, if I'm not mistaken, for the first time ever in the state of California. Did you know that,
and it would also be Auburn's first ever road win against a team currently in the Pac-12. Of the teams on that list, Auburn has never beaten any of them on the road before. They've won.
Beaten them in bowl games.
Beaten them in neutral site games. Oregon and Washington just in the last couple of years, Auburn won those games. But those were not road games. Auburn has
about
a chance.
About that time.
We had a caller last week reminisce about the game. It was a Don Dunn. Wasn't a caller. Don Dunn was talking about the game at USC to start the 2002 season that Auburn almost won. Cadillac returning to California. He was on the field for that game as well, but Auburn looking to win on the road against a Pac-12 team for the first time in program history.
Yep. So
there's still a Pac-12.
Yeah.
Well, they look pretty good this year, don't they? They're going to go out.
They went 13-0 the first week.
They're going to go out with a bang. Is what it looks like.
Oh, the programs themselves. I mean, look, we haven't mentioned Colorado. What a win there for Dion, 21-point underdog.
You're not kidding.
Against the team that went to the national championship game last year, and he goes and picks up that win.
Yeah, Shadur, pretty good first game at the top level.
I mean, one of the best collection. I mean, the SEC's had a couple of years where the top three or four quarterbacks just blows you away with how good they are. I feel like that's the Pac-12 right now. You got Caleb Williams, you got Bo Nix, you got Shadur, you got Uiagalelei is more potential than anything else.
He had a pretty good game.
I mean, people recognize him as when Cam Rising is out there, Utah has a great quarterback as well. It's just a matter of whether or not he can get out there. But no, there's a great collection. Penix Jr. Washington has Michael Penix Jr., who only led the NCAA in yardage last year as a quarterback. So yeah, that's a league with some real firepower on offense. Auburn's going to go get a taste of one of those programs on Saturday when they go to Berkeley.
And we were talking about it during the break that texting to remind us, yes, that T.J. Finley, great first game for Texas State as they knock off Baylor.
Congratulations, T.J. Finley. Big win in his debut with Texas State.
I understand why, but when that happened, I said, Colorado was a big underdog, and they beat TCU. Texas State was a bigger underdog, and they beat Baylor. And TJ was like 22 for 29 for 300 yards, and ran for a touchdown, had some phenomenal passes in that ball game.
It's never been good for TJ.
It's
never been harder to guess what's going to happen in week one games that seem close, because you have, even the information from last year
are so turned over.
To try to project how it's going to work early on. Good luck to folks that are wagering real money on games in the first couple of weeks of the season, because it is a crapshoot, and we saw that on display. We didn't have any FCS teams come up and beat the bowl subdivision. I think we had a couple get really, really close. We didn't have anyone from the from what used to be the D1AA, but we did have a couple of Group of Five teams, including Texas State. Fresno went and beat Purdue. I think Fresno State beat Purdue this weekend. So, a couple of games where the Group of Five team either made it really close or won. And you got to be careful with games like that and take care of business the way Auburn did in that first half against UMass.
Just getting underway here in hour number two of The Drive, which is brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. And we look forward to you joining us. You can give us a call on the Kia of Auburn hotline, Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And the number to get you through is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, rate, review, subscribe, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. It's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and John gets us started here in hour number two. Hey, John.
Hello, John.
Hey, guys. How you been?
Doing all right. Good to hear from you.
Got a couple quick questions. Is the Auburn Football Review not on this year? In the last several years, it's been on, you can catch it on YouTube.
Yep.
I could not find it anywhere.
My wife asked me that, and Dan and I were talking about that earlier today.
We were wondering if, that had been something Auburn had included on YouTube. Since for years it had been
right.
It had been broadcast locally, right, on an affiliate, one of the local
broadcast
channels.
It was always on WSFA,
right?
I haven't seen it there in years, but I've been watching it on YouTube. And
yeah, that's where we'd found it the last couple of years, John.
Yeah, and I wondered if they were moving it behind, like, the paywall to War Eagle Plus or something as they look for content for Auburn's new streaming service /
right.
content
okay.
creation.
There's been no mention of it even there.
That's just sort of an idea I floated out there.
Well,
Andy
when he comes on. The other question, Bill, I heard John went with Wimp last week, and he mentioned something about a Pat Dye documentary on PBS.
Yeah, he said it's coming out, didn't he say the 5th, which would be tomorrow?
I thought it was later in the month. Like
maybe it was the 25th. I wrote it down. I've got it at my office. I'll bring that and mention it. So maybe it's the 25th then, because I remember there was a 5 in there, and that's the first I'd heard of it is when Wimp said that.
Yeah. I haven't heard about it anywhere else, but I know Wimp and Jimmy Rain are good buddies. So
oh, yeah.
I'm sure that's where he got it from.
Yeah, I'll go through my notes that I've got there, and we'll definitely find out about that and let you know.
Well, I appreciate it.
Man, it's good hearing from you, John. Take care.
I believe this is this Mighty, the life and legacy of Pat Dye?
I believe so. It's going to be on both Alabama and Georgia Public TV.
There's going to be a screening on September 20th on Auburn's campus as well.
Right.
There's an announcement from the newsroom at auburn.edu about the movie that Auburn is screening on September 20th.
Does it say when it's going to be on PBS?
I can't find the
because
broadcast
it was gonna be,
information.
It's going to be on like Alabama PBS one day and then the Georgia PBS the next day.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Langdon Hall is where they're screening it on September 20th.
That's where we always used to. That's where free movies
back in the day.
I've
been to some there. Yeah,
yeah,
Auburn,
me too.
Auburn's screening it there. Free for Auburn students. A limited number of public tickets will be available. The tickets will cost $9.90. That is a price set with Pat Dye's 99 wins
right.
as Auburn coach in mind. And those proceeds will go to... I believe those proceeds will go to Crooked Oaks. Yes, the proceeds from the ticket sales will go to Crooked Oaks. So auburn.edu has a little bit more about that.
September 25th on APT, so it is the 25th. And then I believe it will either be the day before or day after. But it was, if you have APT, the Alabama Public Television, Mighty, the Life and Legacy of Pat Dye, will air on Alabama Public Television September 25th at 8. So, yeah, thanks, John, for reminding me, I'd written that down and wanted to bring it in and mention it, and I had left it on my desk.
Produced by Jimmy Rain,
mm-hmm.
So something that's been mentioned in a couple of the articles as well. So it's a should be something worth seeing for folks who care about the life and legacy of Pat Dye.
334-321-1390. That's the Kia of Auburn hotline. We were talking before we ran out of time in hour number one about recruiting. Auburn picking up. Too big. I mean, they are literally, as well as both being, you know, nice additions to the 24 and 25 classes from offensive linemen over the weekend, Brian.
Yeah, it started Saturday. Auburn picked up, I think, their third commitment for the 25 class in Spencer Dowland. He's a 6'6", almost 300-pound, probably an offensive tackle from Athens, Alabama, a really big kid, and you can see that he's going to grow and be a lot bigger. I think he's probably could potentially be a left tackle, but probably a right tackle or a guard. on the next level, in my opinion, just watching some of that sophomore tape. And then on Sunday, they got the number 8 offensive tackle in the country, DeAndre Carter from Santa Ana, California. Even the Rivals has him as an offensive tackle. I think he's a guard all the way, actually. Maybe even a center if he's interested in playing that position. He's about 6'5".
He's a big guy.
345. Pretty physical kid. Can move pretty good. I don't think he's a guy that's going to step in and start as a true freshman, but certainly a guy that could develop into a really good player for Auburn.
Yeah, top. Highly touted. Some places he's top 100.
I think we got him 117 somewhere in there, mm-hmm. something like that.
Anything interesting from the first couple of weeks of the high school season regarding committed players? Anybody having a strong start to? I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here. But yeah, any one of the
Caleb does his little week of watch, which I think will be out tomorrow. Where he tracks Auburn's commitments and what they do each week. So I don't know how they did this past week, but he will have that up here fairly shortly.
I wasn't sure which one of you guys wrote that. I knew you guys did a piece where you track the commitments there. So yeah, Caleb will have that tomorrow, and you can see a couple of Auburn a couple of guys. I think Perry is off to a pretty good start. Unsurprisingly, Perry Thompson among.
Yeah, he's going to put up huge numbers. Yeah,
among
right?
others.
Receiver from Foley. Yes, absolutely.
And I saw a highlight. I think it was Fat Burnett. Another one
that's going to put up incredible numbers.
Yeah, a couple guys where you'll be reading about them in Caleb's piece all season long.
And what about Jeremiah Cobb? One of the top 2 or 3 kids Ooh-hoo. From the 23.
He showed a burst, didn't he? I mean, a nice little quick move and then explosion.
The defense had not waved the white flag yet.
No,
you saw full effort from the UMass defense on that Jeremiah Cobb touchdown, and they still couldn't touch him.
Mm-mm.
Like that was an eye-opening run for a guy who I think could eventually, and I don't know when eventually is, be Auburn's number one tailback. Like that's a guy who could be, you know, someday.
And they all looked good. Sean Jackson looked good. Justin Jones looked good. I mean, Auburn's got a very good situation there.
And they didn't have the number one out there.
That's right. 334-321-1390. Spectre is next on the Kia of Auburn hotline. Hey, Spectre.
Spectre.
Well, I wanted to get on this heroic moment. Not heroic, but this famous moment where you guys are on the radio on a holiday.
Hey, when a ball game has been played the prior week, you'll usually find us here. We don't take a lot of Labor Days off.
Yeah, I haven't had a Labor Day off since I started doing this, Spectre, because we got a game to talk about.
Yeah, really. Well, I want to talk about that Auburn Football Review a minute. That's been one of my pet peeves for years, trying to get it somewhere to watch it. And I guess the person to talk to this about is Andy Burcham and find out what in the world is going on. Last night, WLTZ out of Columbus had it scheduled for 11 o'clock right after the Nick Saban show. And it was on the programming. And I went there, and, of course, I DVR'd it ahead of time, and it didn't come on. It wasn't there. Something else was there. So, you know, it's situation. You know, it's a snafu. Every year it's like this. I have to search, run everywhere, YouTube, anywhere. Bally had it on last year, Bally Network.
The fact that there are TV networks scheduling it, makes me wonder.
Somebody expected it.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if it was supposed to be and you know, something went wrong. But, I mean, they did produce, I mean, Auburn produced some highlights from the game set to Andy's call and put that on their YouTube channel about 3 minutes of, three and a half minutes of assorted highlights with Andy and Jason. But, yeah, the football review itself, which, has been available on YouTube in years past, is not there.
You guys need to send a quick text to Andy and see if he even recorded it yesterday.
I don't know that Andy makes that decision on whether or not.
I'm sure Andy doesn't make that decision.
But he would be a part of it.
Yeah, we're going to hold his feet to the fire, we're going to make sure. We're going to give him the third degree.
But, you know, there's a reason why these coaches' shows are just not as common as they used to be. They're just not as popular, and I don't think as many people watch it.
I think it would be pretty popular as a
It would be now because you freeze, but I think Gus Malzahn and Brian Harsin in many ways just killed it because they weren't really into it. They didn't want to do it. They didn't provide insight when they did have to do it. And I think Hugh Freeze would be different. I think it would be interesting to watch him because I think he would go through the plays with you and explain it to you and make it entertaining and fun. But I just don't know if those shows are going to be around much longer. We'll see.
Yeah, you're right there, because last year, Harsin, I mean, he just absolutely, you just tell the way he was sitting, he didn't want to be there.
Yeah, he was as enthusiastic as a hostage. It was like someone was just off screen. You know,
it's almost like a potato would have done a better job just sitting there.
Spectre, I had a different thought than the thing just going away. With so many places attempting to raise money for NIL, and Auburn is launching this War Eagle Plus streaming service where they're going to have. And I wondered about this. Maybe you would know, Brian. Like, if Auburn wanted to put past games on a streaming service, would they have the. Like, would they have to jump through legal hoops to get the rights to it? Would Auburn presumably have, like if I wanted to put games from the 70s on its streaming service, like, could they do it? Is that something where they, like...
I don't have any idea who has the rights to
it. Like, I don't know.
My guess would be Auburn does, but I don't.
But I'm thinking about what they can put on their streaming service, and one thing that came to mind would be maybe...
That's very good filler.
The football
I know it's a little production. It's some, you know...
So I thought, you know, maybe they were maybe moving it behind... a paywall. We've heard nothing official about that. No. There's been no announcement that that's available on World Plus.
I've got a text in. We'll see.
We'll find out some more information.
That is right.
Hey, one last question.
Uh huh.
You think anybody is having any buyer's remorse after what Sanders did?
What in Colorado? No, I don't think.
No,
so.
No, you mean here?
Oh, here.
Well, in general, around college football, right? There could be programs that could have hired Deion Sanders.
There definitely could be some others
and elected not to.
I don't know who it was, but somebody put on Twitter, I think, or maybe our board that.
Joe Goodman had a big thing about Auburn should have hired Deion.
I didn't read that, but you can say that Deion's doing a great job for Colorado, and also say that Hugh Freeze is doing a great job for Auburn, and Auburn got the best coach for Auburn, right? You can feel. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both.
Right.
You know?
Hey, how about that kid that went both ways in Colorado?
Unbelievable. Travis Hunter, 129 snaps. Impressive. 129. Leading tackler and 11 catches for 100 and something yards. Unbelievable.
That brings back some old memories right there.
You just wonder, can he do that week in and week out? It's hard to believe.
They used to do that.
I know, but everybody's bigger and faster and stronger now, too.
Yeah, well, that's all I got, guys.
All right, appreciate it, Spectre. All right, Spectre joining us here, and we'd love for you to as well. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our first break of hour number two here on the Monday Drive.
It's been from the Abbey Award.
Back here on the Monday edition of the Drive. Before we get back to the phones, I was just thinking about this. All right, in a game where you scored 50, you know, scored 59 and could have scored more. What was your favorite play of the game? What was the highlight of the game?
And it's a weird one, right? But on the punt return that Keontae Hattie cut across the – all right, he's going down the field, and I think it was Eugene Asante had a chance to just, you know, destroy a dude from that blind side
but
block.
It would have been a 15-yard penalty. Touchdown back.
But he was smart. He turned his back and put his arms in the air and just sort of shielded the guy. And allowed, you know, Keontae to get some more yards there. So that to me was a play. I was like, smart play, well coached, good job. You know, two thumbs up from B-Matt, right?
I like the way the season got off. I was thinking, you don't return that kickoff from 8.5 yards deep in the end zone. With Brian Petit, yes, you do.
And then the kid from UMass tried it, and he got pretty much blown up.
Yeah, he made it to the 11-yard line.
You know, I really liked the way the defense after that first drive was able to get after Puma Chan and make things a little bit tougher for him. The Donovan Kaufman sack where he just come. I mean,
that was good.
And there were a few. I mean, I believe Ferguson had the number that five plays where Auburn blitzed Donovan Kaufman and he hurried the quarterback on four of them. Officially, you know, so that's a you know, you wonder if that's something you could see more of Auburn doing as they look for ways to generate a pass rush. Maybe Donovan Kaufman could be an unsung hero, a veteran guy who's played a lot of different spots and is physically how much bigger is McLeod than Donovan Kaufman?
Oh, he's a good bit. He's 30 pounds heavy.
Is Kaufman not in the 210s?
No, I don't think so. He's a smaller guy, but he can bring it.
Yeah, but absolutely.
He's solid now. Don't get me wrong.
Oh no, he's not undersized for what they're asking him to do, especially as you know, slot and dime corners and stuff like that.
I mean, Cloud's 6'1", 230. Donovan's
It's Zion Puckett, who is very close physically as far as what they list. They list Zion and McLeod.
Is down a little bit to 220.
Donovan is 5'10", 204.
Yeah, so he's probably 5'9".
I think at the beginning of fall camp, Zion Puckett and Jalen McLeod were listed at like nearly identical heights and weights.
Isn't Jalen listed around 230 now?
He was 237 last time.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's like 6'1", 230 something.
And what about was the play? I think it was officially the McAllister sack where Steven Sings got a hand on the ball.
Oh yeah,
and you're seeing something I like from the defense is we're seeing
they're going for the ball, rip it out,
swats and rips and things to try to strike the ball away, and Sings had one where he nearly forced a fumble and the quarterback had to regather the ball, take his eyes off the downfield receivers, and that set him up to get sacked by Elijah McAllister.
Yeah, McLeod is 237, Zion Puckett 226. Did McLeod get in the game? I didn't see him.
No, okay. He did not.
We didn't think he would dress out, but he did dress out.
He did dress.
But he has an ankle injury. I think he'll probably be good to go this week. We'll
hope
see.
So. Let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Gary is up next. Hey, Gary.
Hey, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I live up here in the Nashville, Tennessee area, so I try to listen on the internet as much as possible, and love the show. And,
appreciate that.
Appreciate y'all's input and information.
Thanks for listening, Gary. We really appreciate that.
No problem. Thanks. A couple of things. I almost find it somewhat laughable, some of the negativity about this home opener. I mean, Auburn come out there pretty much with a vanilla game plan. They took care of business against an inferior opponent. They played a lot of people. Sure, there was a few mistakes and things. Sure, they got, things they need to correct and all that. But overall, I mean, I thought it was, about as good an opening day win as you can expect. And Peyton Thorne, I mean, I thought, sure, he did make some mistakes, but after he settled down, I thought he played well. I mean, that pass to Jay Fair was a beautiful pass. And I think he's just going to get, keep getting better as the season goes along. And Robbie coming in, he Freeze has been saying all season, fall camp, saying we're going to have a package for Robbie. He's going to have to help us win. And so, if he comes in on the red zone, to run those plays, and eventually he'll probably have to throw off of it, which I think he's capable of doing. I think it was, good overall opening day win. And, I think the defense, sure, the run defense got short some days, no doubt, but they didn't play all that bad. I really liked the pressure they got on the quarterback. And, and in the secondary, I thought really obviously made some plays with Jalen Simpson with the pick six, I think. And I don't understand the negativity, but I guess, some people just never happy.
I like that they could get the pass rush going from a lot of different, and we appreciate the phone call. Great, great stuff. Keep listening up in Nashville. Really, really cool. But the fact they were able to get the pass rush going from different spots. Keldrick Falk, we heard, was limited in the offseason.
He looked pretty good, I thought, Saturday.
He looked pretty good. I think only 15 or 16 snaps, though, so they may have still taken it easy for him. But he passes the eyeball test. Like he's out there. He's like, oh, okay, yeah,
he's a playmaker.
Yeah, and you've said bright future.
Oh, yeah.
for Keldrick. Oh, so yeah. So no McLeod and limited Keldrick Falk. Still Auburn was able to hound the quarterback.
No Nehemiah Pritchett. Yep.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah, Cannon Lee got the start.
Yep. No J.D. Rim. I don't think he played.
I didn't see him.
So yeah.
I mean, I may have missed a guy or two, but they played a lot of players. We'll get one more call before our bottom of the hour break. And Yellowhammer is next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
What's up, Hammer?
Hey. So, anyway, the one thing I take away from the game that just kind of gave me some inspiration to make me feel like, hey, this could be a good team, is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I heard this on the post game, and that is that they had only two minor penalties and no turnovers. And so to play all those people in a new situation with new coaches and go out there and do that, that is pretty remarkable, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree, and
that's one of the things Hugh Freeze talked about it being clean.
Yeah, and they didn't have any. They had four penalties overall, but they didn't have any pre-snap penalties, which I think he is really pleased with. And they won the turnover battle 2-0 and won the time of possession, which Hugh Freeze thinks is an important stat. He talked about that today, which kind of surprised me because you don't necessarily hear coaches mention that.
Especially teams that hurry it up.
Right, right. But that was big for him too. So.
All right. Well, that's about it. Thanks.
Appreciate the call, Yellowhammer. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in. Again, the Kia of Auburn hotline number 334-321-1390 here on the Monday Drive.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 25 minutes here on this Monday. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Brian, I mean, talk about some of the things. Well, give us a little preview of some of the things folks will find and what to expect there at AuburnSports.com.
Sure. And we had tons of coverage of all the recruiting visitors, plus two commitments over the weekend, the game, of course, video interviews with the coaches and players afterwards. And, of course, we were there for Hugh Freeze. And some player interviews earlier today. Got a couple stories up on the site now, and tomorrow we'll get together for our rundown, and then we have a practice viewing period tomorrow afternoon, so we'll get out there and see everybody's lined up and get some video out to you guys.
Yeah, what are you looking for tomorrow now? I mean, we saw the offensive line that we had seen most of the time started, but right. then they swapped, and I thought it was interesting, Hugh Freeze today saying, hey, we've got eight. And he doesn't think it's unusual. This will be the first time I've ever been around a coach who talks about playing eight offensive linemen.
Too. It's always been we got to find our five and then the next two or three for substitutions and injuries. This is totally different. He's rotating on the second series of the game and sounds like they're pretty happy with that. And they'll do that with eight or nine guys if they need to. And one of the reasons Freeze wanted to do it was because when he goes fast, he wants to make sure those guys are not gassed out there. Can still go.
And Gunnar Britton, the SEC Offensive Lineman of the Week, after starting at left guard and playing about half the time at right tackle.
And also played some right guard. Mm-hmm. So played three – no, I'm sorry, left tackle. So he played three different positions in the game, was Auburn's highest-graded offensive lineman in the game, and helped Auburn run for – I think it was close to 300 yards, was it?
Yeah, just under, 289 or something like that.
There you go. So congratulations to Gunnar Britton. And we talked to him today. He's a guy who just loves being here and is excited. He said his whole family was here, his parents, cousins, brothers, you know, they're all here. And it was just a great moment, that first game for him.
And he's the conference offensive lineman of the week, which is a neat honor for a guy making his debut in the SEC and someone who – he talked about this when we got to talk to Gunnar during fall camp. He's a Southerner, and he's someone who wanted to play SEC football and, you know, took the best path for him, which included Western Kentucky for a couple of years. And I think he this opportunity is important for him for a lot of reasons. It's not just about getting film for the NFL draft. It's about getting to have a really special year of college football in the SEC. And did you see the quote that, you know, he thinks that as when he tells his dad's gonna cry is what he said about being named being named conference offensive lineman of the week. So just really cool stuff there from Gunnar, who had I was pleased with the debut of pretty much everybody.
I thought the offensive line played pretty well
on the offensive line, certainly.
Mm-hmm. We'd love your thoughts. What did you think there? And again, you don't want to take too much. You don't want to overreact from an opener. But I think as Hugh Freeze said today, these are good teaching moments coming off a win, because you can say, all right, we won, but you did this, you know. And he's right about a couple of things. And I was trying to think a little while ago what one of the callers was pointing this out too, that there are a couple of things that Auburn has to do better. Because you can't do that when we're talking about Robbie. Now, if teams can't stop him, then you'll keep running. When teams overload to stop the run, then he's going to have to do something else. But there's sure nothing wrong with the success that he had. I mean, when you know he's getting touches and scoring touchdowns.
And he's not like a running back or a defensive back that's being brought in to play quarterback, where if you can just safely assume it's going to be a run and comfortably bring 10 or 11 guys to stop the run. This guy started most of the season last year at quarterback. So I would caution, if a defense feels comfortable just blitzing everybody and playing 100% run because Robbie Ashford's in the game, that could very easily backfire when Auburn wants it to. So that's I'm glad you mentioned Hugh Freeze's press conference, because that's anything really stood out to you from what Hugh had to say?
I sort of expected what he said, and I was glad that he did when he pointed out there are some things, there are some obvious and then some other issues that weren't so obvious to perhaps everyone, but pointing out the things that they could have done, they need to get better, because the competition steps up this week and it's going to get tougher as the season goes on.
I've noticed that he does not, Hugh Freeze does not often single players out when he's not asked about those players. So when he volunteers a player that he's impressed with or someone that he wants to give praise to, I think it might be noteworthy. The Malcolm Johnson thing.
Yep.
At the press conference.
You know,
Malcolm, that was two nice catches.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice catches. Very good throws. Holden, but both those catches were really good.
Yeah, the longer of the two was, I thought was maybe the play of Malcolm's Auburn career so far. You know, with not all that many catches on the board for different reasons. Hearing Hugh Freeze talk about that is, and we saw it ourselves. Malcolm was playing catch up for a lot of the fall because of different injury setbacks. So to see him out there, to see him make a play like that, and Hugh Freeze, a guy who likes to send receivers deep, Malcolm Johnson Jr. could be part of that attack earlier in the game than the fourth quarter if he keeps making plays like that.
Oh yeah, he's going to get more opportunities now, because there's no doubt he is one of the faster guys on the team, and if he makes if he can make some plays like that, that's going to force the defense to really have to respect that more, and then that's going to help your intermediate passing game or your run game.
It is, and if you watched the game, you saw Jay Fair and Javarius Johnson, in the slot, play really well, make plays. But I think Auburn is still looking and searching for those outside guys to step up, and I don't think that's settled yet. And if Malcolm can stay healthy, he can maybe grow into a go-to guy on that outside, and a guy with some speed and some big playability that's been around for several years, just hasn't, because of injuries, a lot of it, just hasn't quite caught on yet.
Now, the longest pass play of the game for Auburn, I thought it was Javari. It was Javarius that caught that pass, wasn't it? When you look at the official stats, it shows Coy.
Don't believe that was a mistake. Okay, Coy,
it's still listed in the official stats.
Yeah. That was a mistake. I don't believe Coy Moore played a snap.
I didn't see him in the game.
On Saturday. No. I think that was a play they meant to.
Six can look like a zero when you look out
that
there.
That was Javarius.
They're built differently.
Yes.
Because Coy is someone like Malcolm who had been battling injuries for much of the offseason, and we weren't sure how much we were going to see him early on
because keeping up with how many catches Jay and Javarius had. It's like, Javarius had more than three catches for 11 yards. He had that long one.
Javarius had the long one, I think officially we were
he's going to end up with 4 for 44 instead of 3 for 11.
Yeah, on the Observer podcast, we were sort of surprised that by Sunday they had not corrected that. But
it's still not corrected in Auburn stats
it's
today.
Still, but that was not Coy Moore. That was VAR. So maybe someone. I'll send a text to Riley during the commercial and see.
We did get a response. We were going to break. And Andy Burcham, who will be on tomorrow, we asked him about the Auburn football review, and he said they're working to put something out on Auburn football every day. So Auburn football every day looks like we'll be back, and it will air different times Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. Different times Thursday through. We'll get more details tomorrow from Andy, but doesn't look like a specific Auburn football review.
Before we go to break, we've talked a little bit about Florida. We've talked a little bit about LSU and the
spanking in the second half
collapse against Florida State. Anyone else from the league? Anything?
Well, I mean, I think you saw in the South Carolina game, and we've seen it here at Auburn. when you have an offensive line that struggles, that destroys the rest of your offense, right? It just doesn't work. And South Carolina's offense doesn't work with that offensive line playing the way it was. It was just disastrous.
And Spector, I guess, was bringing up, and we'll see. Now, Auburn needs to continue playing well. But, yes, what you do on the field does have some effect on recruiting. If Auburn performs better than people had thought heading into the season, that will help. And if teams that they're recruiting against, say a Florida or a South Carolina, struggle,
right,
then it will make it easier to try to go in and flip some of their players.
You better believe that coaches across the country were double checking Florida's commit list after week one.
You know that.
That's just how it is. So, you know,
my conspiracy theory, again, I have not watched the documentary. I think that Swamp Kings is part of Urban Meyer's plot to get his job back at Florida. Because even the commercials of Swamp Kings talk about how Florida was this ragtag program until Urban Meyer showed up. Just right? Like, oh, they didn't know victory. They didn't know success at Florida.
Like Steve Spurrier.
Like, no, I mean it felt like, it seems like even from the advertising, it feels like revisionist history. And the goal of that would be let's bring him back. Let's get the gang back together. Let's get Urban back. Mullen is available. Maybe he'd come back as OC. Maybe Tebow would want to be there somehow in some official capacity, but just feels to me like something with a. Am I off base here, Bill?
No, I don't think so. I haven't seen it, but that's what it does. That's what it does appear like. Have you watched it?
I refuse to watch it. I've heard enough about it, so I'm not going to watch it.
Reputation laundry for Urban Meyer before, and maybe it's not Florida. Maybe it's another job. Maybe it's Texas or Texas A&M. You know, maybe there's another place that wants a. Urban sees, you know what, maybe he sees a robust market for a successful coach this offseason, because there could be some marquee places looking for new coaches.
We'll find out a little bit more about A&M this week. You've got Alabama and Texas, but you got A&M Miami as well this week.
A&M goes on the road. Some really interesting out of conference games in the SEC this week.
Yeah, and the Auburn-Cal game is one of those.
What's your right now, and you can change your mind between now and Friday, right now, what are you expecting in Bama, Texas?
I think Alabama wins in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, Texas is still not back. Sorry.
I think Alabama wins it. I think Texas has some success offensively. I think it's a shootout.
I don't want to overreact to anything I saw from Alabama on Saturday, because they were playing an overmatched opponent too. Milroe can make some throws.
He looked pretty comfortable throwing.
I don't know. That's
what you got to do. I mean, how much can you make him uncomfortable without giving him open pasture to run to?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, because you don't just want to go, okay, let's force him to run. I don't know about that, because he's a great runner too.
I wonder if you need to force him to make quick,
you got to contain, try to fluster him, frustrate him.
Yes. Yeah, quick, short, intermediate throws, and hopefully he makes a mistake on one of them, or you can bottle them up after the catch and keep. You know, I don't know. Like, it's a tough puzzle, but he did not. Quarterback did not seem like a weakness.
And
it didn't seem like there was a. I mean, maybe there's competition. I would expect to see Milroe for most of the Texas game based on what we saw. Like, I mean, I would think it's Milroe playing against Texas on Saturday.
Yeah, I saw Sark talking about him, going, yeah, I recruited him. I love him. So, yeah. We'll get to our final break here. It's still time for you to join in as we continue here with the Monday Drive.
Kia of Auburn is marking down every car on the lot during our Sale Down Labor Day sale. If you are looking for a new...
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of The Drive here on this Monday. Bill and Dan with Brian Matthews from auburnsports.com. Yep, Brian's Monday musings today, looking back at the game. And then, of course, the sad news of the passing of Jimmy Buffett.
I remember seeing him at Bear D's back in the 80s when I was a student.
He was fairly regular. I mean, he'd come every year or so.
I cannot believe he's not in the Music Hall of Fame. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, no kidding.
That is ridiculous. He's in the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. He should be in the Songwriters and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Favorite Buffett song?
Probably Come Monday, probably for me.
Son of a Sailor.
That's another great
because
one.
Which is about because my dad was a sailor, so right. My boys are.
Which is about his grandfather who taught him to sail in Mobile Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, is it one semester at Auburn? A little more
quarters
than that.
Back then.
Gonzo was drunks a year up quarter, there, but I don't ever hear that much anymore.
Well, the Gonzo?
No, God's Own
Drunk. God's Own Ogun.
Yeah.
What was it?
The bear.
Changes in latitude. Yeah, Changes in Latitude.
That's another great one.
The one with Kermit the Frog is good. Caribbean Amphibian.
I mean, it's funny. I mean, a lot of the stuff that the Parrotheads knew before he was really, really popular.
But, I mean,
because he had Come Monday was really, was it as far as pop until Margaritaville.
But, you know, Songs You Know By Heart, which is his just incredible best hits album. I played that 1,000 times, you know, back in the day. It came out in 85, so it's, you know, right when I started at Auburn. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, sad. And I was a little disappointed. I was just telling you during the break. It's like I saw a couple of write-ups. I think ESPN had one write-up talking about the game. Auburn's game was on ESPN, and they could tell that, that Auburn – had a tribute to Jimmy Buffett, but it opened up with Alabama did and some other schools did. Yeah. And it's like, oh, come on.
Do you want a Buffett song to become a tradition at Jordan-Hare Stadium the way that Tom Petty's, Won't Back Down is now a song they sing at
fourth quarter in Gainesville?
Yeah.
I mean, Margaritaville would be a great song to play after they win.
After the first quarter or after a win, you play Margaritaville. Here's the thing, though. The student section has to do their part and learn every word. Because I wanted, what I wanted to happen on Saturday, and I understand it was impromptu, when
the music to stop and the crowd to
And Ben did a great job with the music on Saturday. I thought, there have been times when people have voiced complaints about the music in the stadium. I thought Ben did a good job with some timely stuff on Saturday, including the Jimmy Buffett tributes. But I was hoping when he pulled it away during the Margaritaville chorus because play resumed, I was hoping the stadium was going to take was going to take it away and keep singing it. And that's not what happened. But I think something like that.
Is Freebird going to be part of the intro?
I hope so. I think that Freebird is a clever. I think that the guitar riff
Freebird,
from Freebird.
I mean, you just had the Eagle Flight.
I think Freebird either is part of the intro or is part of the is the Eagles theme.
Yeah.
I mean, the Eagles theme. Probably
I mean, that'd
be
fine. Yeah. I just don't know if you wonder how the Eagles would respond to the play, but that would be cool play.
Well, you mean like Don Henley and?
No, our Eagles.
War Eagle.
Yes, War Eagle. Oh God.
I bet
we're getting near the end of the show.
I bet Walsh would be okay with it.
I'm sure he would.
Anyways, sorry, that was my fault. I thought that Jordan-Hare was at its, we were talking about the enthusiasm leading up to the game.
It was juiced.
Yeah, it really was. To use the word of the...
That is the popular
the
term.
Word of fall camp. There was some juice. There was some juice in that stadium. Homecoming in a week and a half.
That's crazy, isn't it?
It is strange to have
homecoming this early,
especially
the end of September.
Well, and to have it 2 weeks after a game that was as attended as this one, right? So I feel like a lot of the same folks that are coming for homecoming were here for the opener. And then 2 weeks later, you got Georgia coming to town, and you'll probably be back for that one as well because that's going to be a big one. So, yeah, three games that are, for different reasons, can't miss at Jordan-Hare in the month of September. And you can catch those games, if you're not at Jordan-Hare, on Wings 94.3. The home of the Auburn Sports Network here in the Auburn Opelika area. Andy and Jason and Will, sensational. I thought got to hear much of it. I told you I showed you my new method in the press box.
Yeah,
with one ear of the noise canceling headphones, listening to the listening to the official broadcast, and it sounded great. Jason tried to get Sweet Feet going as Sean Jackson's nickname, and Andy was apprehensive. is how I would sort of describe it. But no, they worked really, really well together. And
speaking of Andy Burcham will be joining me here in the studio. Dan going to check out practice tomorrow afternoon, then give us an update after that. So it should be a fun show. Good start for the Auburn Tigers. I think good start to the week here on The Drive. Look forward to talking to you tomorrow. Brian, let everybody know how they can follow everything you and the guys are doing.
Check us out, auburnsports.com. Follow me on Twitter or Threads or anywhere, really. Be mad at you.
That's going to wrap things up for the Monday Labor Day edition of The Drive. We're back with you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.